This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance, no problem. Now get $100 off your first month when you go to Talkspace.com/podcast. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/podcast. Talkspace.com/podcast.
Coming up on Millennial.
Oh, and then of course you might get this you'd when, you know, they share a moment and they're like, yeah. This you? Yeah, that was me. Okay, and your point is?
No, it was my evil twin.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I was hacked and I didn't realize it. Thank you. Thank you so much for pointing this out. I want to text every morning at 8 a.m. You're going to get out of bed and you're going to text me.
I'm not waking up at 8 a.m. 8:30.
8:30? Okay.
That's my compromise.
That'll be 5:30 my time, an hour before I get up.
Set your Slack notifications to do not disturb, and that way I can send it to you and you won't get the notification.
Not Slack, Laura, because there's a new feature where you can schedule messages in Slack. You're going to cheat and pre-schedule them. I want text messages, things you can't schedule in advance.
That's so much work. Just schedule a Slack.
No, it's not.
That is a lot of work.
Hey, Laura, what's up? It's time to drop in. Give me 20. Let's go.
Modified, right? I can do 20 modified push-ups.
Modified. There's a blunt at the end of this set.
That's what I'm talking about.
Welcome to Millennial 739. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
On today's episode, we're discussing this viral TikTok that addresses a unique observation about how quick people can be to attack you on social media. Then we'll talk about the increase in those who are experiencing insomnia. And finally, we'll talk about outrageous, truly jaw-dropping, outrageous shipping rate increases here in the U.S. just in time for the holiday season. And we'll talk about how it's going to affect the holiday season as well. But first, got a lot of feedback about last week's episode, and I wanted to address a bit of it. First of all, shout out to Tara, who said my comments inspired her to leave a job that was seriously affecting her mental health. I spoke about winding down Hypeable and leaving that behind to pursue other things. And wow, the fact that that inspired you, Tara, that meant a lot. So thank you.
Fuck yeah, Tara.
Yeah, sorry. Fuck yeah, Tara. Becky said she'd been thinking about taking the jump herself, but she was actually looking for more advice, and some people did try to help her out in the Facebook group. I wanted to read a little bit of this. My husband just quit his high-paying software development job to pursue his own ventures. He has a few projects he's been working on for a few years and wanted to be able to really dedicate his time to them. I work full-time and also have a decently successful side hustle. He's also going to start assisting me with my side business stuff because it's starting to grow and, frankly, get overwhelming. But Becky admits that mentally, she's trying to adjust to this leap of faith, and it's hard. Yes, Becky, it is very, very hard to do. As somebody mentioned, at least one person mentioned in the Facebook group, you do seem to have a backup plan in place. And I can't remember if we mentioned this last week, but having a backup plan in place should hopefully make you feel a lot better and something to fall back on. I wouldn't necessarily recommend taking a leap of faith and jumping into having absolutely nothing. Like maybe you have a little money saved up, or maybe you have a plan to get a job, or you're feeling confident that you will have a job in the near future, or maybe you don't need the job for a little bit of time, you know, so just have some sort of plan in place. Anyway, just wanted to mention that. Also, one of our friends listened to the episode and called me because they were so inspired.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
so lovely.
Really. Laura, we did get some other feedback too. Not as glowing.
No, but you know what?
About a different
I think
topic.
This is really good feedback because it's just emblematic of the fact that even though I think, you know, we and then probably most of our listeners share a lot of opinions ideologically, but there's also a lot of nuance to be had. This is based on the political compass discussion we did a couple of weeks ago, and this is from Anna. Anna says, I agree with you 99% of the time and think you all are amazing, smart, well-informed hosts. However, I was a little shocked to hear your thoughts on what I think of as an archaic form of child rearing. I am 32 and I have 3 children, ages 3, 6, and 8, and I am strongly opposed to spanking or any other form of physical punishment. There's been so much research done about the negative outcomes of spanking, and it is reiterated again and again that it does not work. I understand that you all were spanked in childhood and feel fine about that, but I think to validate it on the show is a mistake. I also understand that you do not have children and might not be familiar with a lot of the newer research around positive parenting and other methods of raising kids. Parents now are also encouraged to repeat over and over to children that their bodies are their own and never to let anyone touch them in a way they do not like, even if this includes not wanting to be hugged or kissed. Spanking is violating a child's personal physical space, which completely goes against the message of my body is my own. I really appreciated this feedback. Mm-hmm. I think that it points out a really valid, I guess you could call it blind spot, because again, no one on this panel has children. So that is something to observe. I will point out that the point of the political compass test was more about measuring attitudes in order to determine where you fall ideologically on the scale. However, that doesn't mean that there's not feedback that's relevant here. And actually, this was one of the nicer pieces of feedback we got about the spanking conversation. So yeah. I just wanted to thank Anne for this, or Anna, excuse me, because this is very constructive and it's certainly given me something to think about. I don't plan on having children personally, yeah. But it's just, you know, something that I probably would not have thought about otherwise unless we'd gotten the feedback. So I appreciate it.
And I didn't cite specific research, but I definitely did mention that I know there's some new research that definitely discourages spanking. But I have something else I want to add here. Anna said, I bet a lot of our listeners think that they agree with us 99% of the time. I would actually prefer you only agree with us 90% of the time, maybe even less than that. I prefer if we are giving you some alternate viewpoints that you don't agree with to help open up everybody's world a little more. And I'm not saying you don't accept different opinions than your own, but I think it's good that we have disagreements, whether it's here on the panel or between the panelists and the listeners. So while I welcome this feedback, I also encourage everybody to please accept that we're not going to be agreeing with you all the time. Not even 99% of the time. Not even 90% of the time.
And vice versa. Like you don't have to, we don't have an expectation here on the panel that the people listening agree with us most of the time either. In fact, I know we have some listeners who tend to skew more conservative than we do. And I know that they disagree with a lot of what we say. So I think that's the point of having civil discourse, is the ability to discuss these things, you know, in a way that I think a lot of mainstream outlets are not giving us. Like, we're not seeing civil discourse anywhere, which was another reason why I wanted to surface this email from Anna, because I thought that this was very valid, very to the point, cited research, and pointed out a blind spot that we had here on the panel. So,
yeah,
I'm down with it.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to get into our first main story now, and I want to preface this by saying this does not have anything to do with the email we just got from Anna.
No, not at all. Anna's email
was great.
We've
been talking about this for like a few weeks, so yes, can all vouch for that.
There's this viral TikTok that highlights how quick people online are to attack and judge others on social media if the person who's sharing the original thought doesn't offer every caveat imaginable. And to start this discussion, I'm going to play this TikTok, and this TikTok is actually responding to a tweet. So there's a lot going on here, but the person in the TikTok reads the tweet as well. So this is 2 minutes, but it's really good. Here we go.
I think a great summary is this tweet that someone else tweeted. It says, there's an extraordinarily defensive style of writing where I can recognize if someone is probably active on Twitter or TikTok or not by how often they include weird preemptive defenses of positions no sane person would ever take. Exactly. I'll explain what I mean. So, like, the internet in general has taught people that something that was said in good faith, they can twist to be said in bad faith. So that they can, like, seem high and mighty that day and, like, put themselves on a pedestal and be like, well, you forgot this, gotcha. But everyone who's normal knows that's not what the person meant. An example is years ago, I said, I don't want to have kids. And someone said, you're an eco-fascist. And I said, how? And they're like, well, you didn't specify. You didn't specify that you meant you don't want to have kids for personal reasons, not you didn't want to have kids because of overpopulation. And I'm like, okay, well, I didn't say that. I just said I don't want to have kids. And then, well, next time you better specify all the other reasons. And it's like, yeah, you're insane. You're literally crazy. Right there, no sane person. Because that doesn't happen in real life. Imagine you're having a conversation and someone, like, stops you. And they're like, blah, blah, blah. Can you go through, like, all these marginalized identities you didn't include and weren't talking about and specify you didn't mean against them? Obviously, I didn't mean that. People online are in this fantasy land where if every sentence that's ever uttered isn't catered to them and has every box checked off and it isn't like a fucking PhD student's essay, then they found a loophole where they can feel high and mighty today by yelling at someone for something they didn't even say. That's how TikTok is turning into Tumblr, which has already happened to Twitter. And also, by the way, none of these people actually do anything in real life. They're not going after, like, billionaires destroying the earth. They're inserting context that wasn't there in, like, other leftist posts and then playing gotcha when that person can't defend themselves because that's not even what they were talking about.
So I shared this in our Slack a few weeks ago because I was really shook by this. And part of the reason why I was shooketh is, A, I have a presence on social media, and sometimes I say some things that piss people off for reasons that this person is describing. And B, of course, we have this podcast, and sometimes people will come for us because we didn't include every little caveat imaginable. So I wanted to talk about this. Do you two experience this as well, whether it's with the podcast or maybe on social media?
Yeah, I've definitely experienced this before, and I'm going to be honest, I can't think of specific examples, but I don't want to be high and mighty myself and say that I've never done this to someone.
Yeah.
I feel like in this climate where everything is so polarized, it's really easy to slide into doing this. So I kind of want to preface my contributions to this discussion by saying I'm not totally 100% convinced that I've never done this same thing.
Yeah.
I've also definitely been on the receiving end of this. This is also a huge reason why a very long time ago I stopped reading the comments on my work. Especially when you start writing for, you know, larger outlets that do have way more active commenters and stuff. It's just like you miss one thing and people are ruthless. Or you suggest something that somebody doesn't like and they are just relentless. It's gotten to the point where, like, at one particular outlet I was writing for, they had to remove my email address and they had to remove my Twitter handle and they had to remove my last name for a week. Wow. So that people could not find me.
Jesus.
So, yeah, it's just kind of crazy how the internet can and will just, like, sink their claws into you and then just, like, not let up.
And a lot of these people are hiding behind Twitter eggs or Disney cartoon characters, so they feel like they can get away with murder in the comments or in your at replies or in your email. You know, for example, we have a confessional that can open up criticism that we maybe not would have got, that we maybe would not have received if we were out on the street and these people were approaching us. I have one specific recent example, and I brought this up in some of our Patreon content, and I've gotten attacked sometimes online for people will sometimes call me a hypocrite, especially recently as it pertains to J.K. Rowling, like saying, why are you doing MuggleCast if you're denouncing J.K. Rowling? Like, stop doing the podcast, stuff like that. One of these people who's been eager to criticize me, and again, like going back to this TikTok, this person said in the TikTok, these people have no life. They really have no life. This person decided, who was attacking me, to go into my Twitter history, and she somehow discovered that I had retweeted Chrissy Teigen like a year ago and Meghan McCain when she had said something funny about Trump a year ago. And then she brings this up to me last week, and she was saying, how dare you retweet Chrissy Teigen a year ago? Because 10 years ago, Chrissy Teigen said something really offensive on Twitter when she was in her mid-20s. That was her reason for why I should not retweet Chrissy Teigen in 2021. One tweet. I'm like, I don't agree with what Chrissy Teigen said 10 years ago, but I'm going to be held to what somebody else said 10 years ago when I retweet them? Are you kidding me? And that's a small example and doesn't exactly relate to what's going on in this TikTok. But we have definitely felt this before where we bring up points on the show and listeners say, or people tell us in social media, you've forgotten to bring this up as well. And we're like, just because we didn't bring it up doesn't mean that we agree or disagree with it. We just forgot to bring it up. Or we're not going to sit here for an hour and offer
caveats. Or it wasn't brought up in the right way.
Right.
Like it was it was too much of a throwaway for their liking.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what like all of this really comes down to is interacting in good faith. And if you feel the need to ask a follow-up question to somebody, doing that in good faith instead of in an accusatory manner, because it's one thing to say, well, what about this? You didn't say this. And it's a completely other thing to say, you know, oh, like, can I ask you your thoughts about how this relates to your first point?
Right. Exactly. So
yeah, and I think that we can all agree that there are good actors and bad actors. Right. So, for example, I'm not going to shit on anybody for, you know, rage tweeting at anyone with the last name Trump. Right. Except Barron. I don't know if he has a Twitter account, but he's a child. Leave him alone. But any of these other bad actors, I don't think you owe them the benefit of the doubt. Right. But if it's someone who you have a reasonable history with, I think it is probably better to assume that. Something else that I've seen before and been on the receiving end of, without getting too specific, are these sort of like personal attacks, like, oh, you must think that because you have not experienced X, Y, and Z thing, or you don't have any personal context that would make you understand this particular issue. And it's like, oh, you got to be careful with that because you have no idea what the things are that I don't go into on the show, right?
Right.
So, like, calm down and stop assuming that you know what's going on in people's personal lives.
The thing is, too, is that that also implies that everybody you're speaking to has a lack of an ability to empathize with different lived experiences. And, like, as a society, that is something that we should not want. You should always hope that anybody you're interacting with, regardless of whether they understand where you're coming from, at least has the emotional capability to empathize with you or with anybody else.
Again, I was really stunned by this TikTok because it just really hit on something that I had been and we all had been thinking over the course of the past couple years. And I think we see more and more of it. I really do wonder how we got here. Is it just because people get to hide behind an avatar? And they are, maybe there is boredom involved, and they want to feel like they're taking the high road all the time. There's something missing from their lives, and they need to fill it with this type of behavior.
I think that We definitely have a friend of the show who is a licensed therapist who I'm sure has opinions on the impacts of social media upon sort of like our collective mental health state. But I think convenience is a huge factor. You know, think about before the internet, before social media, if people wanted to mobilize around a cause, there were some barriers there, right? You had to travel to do it. You had to physically present yourself. And the internet takes those barriers away, which in some respects is a great thing. It allows people to be engaged, more engaged with current affairs than I think they probably were before. It allows you to connect with people all over the world who you otherwise would probably never know. But at the same time, it allows for this kind of behavior. And I bounce back and forth on this because I find it simultaneously frustrating, but also sometimes I wonder if this is just some clunky overcorrection happening specifically on the left. Like, we're going through a pretty massive cultural shift right now. And there are a lot of topics that are hot, that are on people's minds, that are hard to grapple with. People are learning at different rates. And maybe this is just part of that process. So I try to be patient with people, but I also get frustrated when people start devolving into this kind of behavior because it's pointless. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah. I think part of the issue is that for popular opinions, those statements are made as factual instead of just as, well, I learned this from here and this is my source. When in reality, a lot of times things are much more nuanced than that. You know, like I take a look at, for example, like labels, right? When you look at the LGBTQ community, some people embrace the term queer as a catch-all. Other people still have a problem with that. And you have people on both sides that are saying, my viewpoint on this is correct because I'm in the community. No, my viewpoint on this is correct because you're in the community. And I just kind of feel like sometimes it breeds this space where there's no room to learn from each other. And it almost ends up kind of like, in a weird sort of way, gatekeeping people that are trying to learn how to operate the right way. And you never want to ostracize anybody that's trying to be better.
Yeah.
But a lot of times for these social conversations, there is no one right answer that's going to suit everybody.
No. You can never. This is something we've learned from writing online and podcasting and, you know, offering benefits through the Patreon. You can never please everybody. I tell people this all the time. You are always going to disappoint somebody. Please do not try to please 100% of people you're either working with or in your audience. It's just never going to happen. It's impossible.
I wanted to add, actually, the aforementioned therapist, Dr. Sarah Steelman, who's a licensed marriage and family therapist, commented in our Discord saying, asynchronous communication is not good for emotional topics because you can just get so much wrong without tone and nonverbals.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, think about that. Think about a tweet you read that maybe really pissed you off. And imagine how that tweet might have landed differently if you'd been face-to-face with the person.
Definitely.
Yep. I mean, it still might have pissed you off, but there's a chance that it might not have.
You know, speaking of the left, and I think we've kind of mentioned this, the left really does attack their own sometimes. And that's definitely one of the biggest problems with the left. Now, that said, in better news, the left can be good at checking itself. And I don't think you see that as much on the right. And again, we're not perfect. I am not perfect. I feel like I really confuse some people sometimes on Twitter when I'm fighting a troll. I'll be like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right. They can't believe that I'm actually like admitting that they might be right about something. And also accept that we all evolve. We all evolve too. Getting back to J.K. Rowling, like I was defending her a couple years ago. And in hindsight, I wish I didn't.
I agree. People should absolutely be given the benefit of evolution. I do think with regard to J.K. Rowling is a great example of someone who I don't know at this point that evolution would change my mind on her because she has doubled down so many times mm-hmm. on her ridiculous arguments. So I do think that there can be a point of no return. But I also just think that a lot of the way that we interact with each other needs to be treated as a case-by-case basis and not sort of a blanket statement of anyone who thinks this particular opinion is a piece of shit and is, you know, their thoughts aren't worth anything, et cetera, et cetera. So I wish that we as a culture could get better at approaching people on a more case-by-case basis when possible. And that applies to me too, because again, I just want to really specify that I think I've probably done this before. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I have. This show, we're in like almost the eighth season of this show. I am sure that somebody could go back through all, you know, however many hundreds of episodes we have and find something where I'm lighting somebody up for a particular piece of context that sounds bad, but maybe later other information came out that we didn't revisit, or maybe there was a piece of the puzzle I was missing that actually made it not as bad as I was making it out to seem. So,
right.
I just feel like it's really important to admit that we're all fallible and we're all capable of making this mistake. It just doesn't help.
Yeah. Oh, and then of course you might get this you'd when, you know, they share a moment and they're like, yeah. This you? Somebody tried to do that to me last week. I was like, yeah. That was me. Okay. And your point is?
No, it was my evil twin.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was hacked and I didn't realize it. Thank you. Thank you so much for pointing this out. Pam, I think the writing online, at least for me, I've gotten better with like reading feedback and stuff. It's really hardened me, my years working in online media.
Yeah. I don't feel the need for that kind of validation anymore. When I first started, I wanted to read every comment, and then I also got burned very fast, and then I just realized that it wasn't worth it, you know. But if somebody comes into my space, like if somebody takes the time to, you know, send me a tweet or something, then maybe that might be different.
Yeah.
for better or for worse.
I've just gotten to the point where if somebody's trying to bait me, be it on social or through email, it happens occasionally, I just mute and move on with my life. I don't even engage with it. And, you know, I will say there was a time, especially doing these podcasts when I was a bit younger, where that kind of thing would sting a little bit. But I guess it's happened enough at this point that I just don't care anymore. I'm like,
yeah,
fucking roast me, cancel me, whatever you feel is appropriate. I do not care.
I fall for the bait. I can admit when I'm wrong. I can do that all day, every day. But when people call me out on Twitter, I sometimes can't resist. Just like last week.
For me, it depends on what it is. It's case by case. It's like, do I have the energy to do this? And if the answer is yes, then,
yeah,
you know, perhaps I'll engage a little bit. But if the answer is no, then,
yeah. You know,
I'll just let it go.
Chris is bringing up a really great point in the Discord. They're saying, so being wrong now is kind of uncomfortable. And that's such a great point.
Yeah.
Because on top of being called out if you didn't, you know, phrase something in exactly the right way, or if a comment didn't land, if you say something that turns out to be false or factually inaccurate, the pile on can be extreme and it's just not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah. Again, this is another one of these things where if we get like 50 emails being like, you guys got this wrong, I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like, cause people don't know that we're hearing from however many other people about it. But I think especially if you're in a social media context where the comments and responses are public, and you just see people piling onto this person with the same correction like 200 times, it's a bit much. So mm-hmm. It can be scary to admit when you're wrong because you know that that kind of reaction could be waiting for you. Like you, Andrew, I think it's a lot easier just to admit I was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it also sucks to have to admit that you're wrong, because you might also be trying to put together a really great product that you spend a lot of time working on. And then you put it out and suddenly there's something maybe very wrong or just a little wrong. And you get really frustrated with yourself because you're like, oh, damn, I just put all this effort into this over the past week and there was this big flub. F my life. But anyway, we could probably start moving on from this.
Let us know your thoughts. Are we being snowflakes? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think being snowflakes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm kidding.
I think that we all can go a little easier on everybody.
We'll be back to the show in a minute, but first, a quick word from our first sponsor of the week, Third Love. We put our bodies through so much, pushing them to the limit for sport, family, fashion, and fun. And when you think about it, it's pretty incredible that our bodies keep up. Third Love believes every body is amazing and deserves to be treated that way. I love knowing that I can depend on Third Love's underwear, loungewear, and activewear to hug better, hold stronger, and support longer. I recently ordered a couple of Third Love's Flex Seamless Sports Bras, and I have been living in these ever since. They are so comfortable. It's really nice for working from home, being on the go, or just lounging around the house to have a bra that's supportive enough to break a sweat and comfy enough to change how I feel about sports bras. Third Love obsesses over each stitch, so you never have to think about how something feels, looks, or wears. And they've got your back while you're out and about, or just hanging out at home. With the softest sleepwear, luxe washable silk, and bras that you won't want to take off when you get home. The 90,000 five-star reviews don't lie. Feeling is believing. Upgrade to everyday pieces that love your body as much as you do. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order at thirdlove.com/millennial. That's 20% off at thirdlove.com/millennial.
All right, Laura, so you're going to kick off our next topic about insomnia.
Yeah, so I was actually reading an article recently from the BBC about the increase of insomnia, or the increased rates of insomnia during the pandemic. We're coming up on 19 months that this has been going on. So I was reading that some experts have started referring to decreased sleep during the pandemic as COVIDsomnia or coronasomnia. And I wanted to ask y'all to kick us off. Have we noticed a decrease in the amount or the quality of sleep we're getting over the last couple years?
First of all, those terms sound like cookies. Second, I think early on in the pandemic, definitely. But as time has gone on, and this isn't to say that coronavirus is over by any stretch of the imagination, we're, as you've said on the show before, learning to live with COVID, and thus it becomes less stressful because we do see a light at the end of the tunnel. And there is a light currently shining in the tunnel, and that light lets us learn how to operate during this pandemic.
For me, I had trouble sleeping prior to COVID, so I cannot blame my sleep issues on the pandemic.
But the pandemic hasn't made it any easier, I'm assuming.
No, it hasn't. But I don't think I've noticed a drastic change in relation to that. It's just been steadily similar.
Well, there is some really interesting information out about insomnia rates right now. And we also reached out to our Facebook group to hear some of people's personal stories. But one of the rates that I found really interesting was a study from the University of Southampton found that insomnia rates rose from 1 in 6 to 1 in 4 people. That's a pretty big jump, and it's pretty understandable. And this was also a phenomenon that was documented globally, not just here in the United States, especially around the time that the pandemic was really wreaking havoc in Italy and other parts of Europe. Insomnia rates there were very, very high, much higher than they've been in the past. Also, the word insomnia was Googled more in 2020 than ever before.
That's crazy. Yeah. And Google Trends are always so interesting to me because that truly shows you what's going on in the minds of everybody. So if you see an increase in insomnia on Google, that definitely proves that more people are experiencing insomnia and are up at 3 a.m. Googling it to try and figure out what to do about it.
And you might be wondering why it's a problem. So apart from needing healthy sleep routines to feel your best during the day, insomnia can lead to decreased productivity and reaction time, as well as increased risk for various health issues like obesity, anxiety, depression, and cardiovascular events. It also just makes functioning during the day so much harder. And I will say that I have definitely noticed this over the course of the last couple of years. I've always been a night owl. I've always had a hard time falling asleep at night. I tend to be somebody who just has more energy until about 2 a.m. and then I pass out, but then I'm exhausted the next day until about noon. Like I wake up to do work and then for the morning I feel so sluggish. And like I could be accomplishing so much more if I could just convince myself to go the fuck to sleep.
Laura, go the fuck to sleep. Bad Laura.
Can you
Laura,
record that?
Bad Laura.
I should get that audiobook that Samuel L. Jackson did. Go the fuck to sleep.
Just for myself.
That's the real name of the book?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's got a tiger on the front. It's really great.
Something else interesting that came from a psychiatrist and neurologist out of Mayo Clinic said, if you're having insomnia, you're in good company. Much of the world is too. It's a consequence of all the changes we're experiencing in COVID. And he actually refers to these challenging times as almost biblical. So it's really important to remember that if you're experiencing this right now, you are not alone. A lot of people are right there with you.
That's always good to know.
Yeah, definitely helps a lot. So I was wondering if each of us could share one thing that we know contributes to insomnia or even just lack of sleep for us personally.
Yeah. So for me, I don't know if I would describe what I sometimes experience as insomnia just because it doesn't happen too often. But when I do have a hard time falling asleep at night, it's normally because my mind is racing with certain thoughts. Maybe it's about the week ahead or it's something that stressed me out on that day and it continues to stress me out. I simply can't take it out of my head. So just for me, it's definitely thinking about something that's stressing me out.
For me, it's also racing thoughts. But I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago on the show. I recently got a noise machine and that's been really helpful.
Good.
Just to focus on something. I know that you can technically do that by focusing on your breathing or just like listening to the fan in your room if you have like a ceiling fan, but I needed something a little bit more. And I just noticed that really, really helped when I started using it in August.
Mm-hmm. I also suffer from racing thoughts and just generally not being able to get my brain to shut down at night. I'm already sort of thinking ahead to the next day or maybe the next few days if I know that I have a busy week at work. So what this leads to for me is I end up, because I can't sleep, I end up doom scrolling. Which is, you know, picking your app of choice and just going through it and seeing all the horrible things that are going on in the world. Or one of my favorites is TikTok. And this is all a consequence of having my phone accessible in bed. Actually, for the last few nights, I've been making a concerted effort to plug my phone in across the room from me on my dresser so that when my alarm goes off in the morning, I have to get up and go turn it off.
Oh, no.
Although, you want to know some shit? I guess the other morning an Amber Alert went off.
Oh.
And I woke up to my alarm in the morning and the phone was in bed with me. And I was like, I know that I went and plugged this in last night before I went to bed. And I asked Mark, I was like, did you unplug my phone and like bring it over to me? And he was like, no. So I must have dead ass asleep, heard the Amber Alert going off, gotten up, gotten my phone, turned it off, and laid back down. I have no recollection of this.
Or your phone magically came across the room and landed next to your bedside because it knows you want it.
My home is haunted.
Your home's haunted. Yes, a ghost carried it over. Ooh.
A very helpful ghost that just wanted you to have your phone nearby.
Like, hey, pay attention to this Amber Alert.
It sounds like a premise for a horror movie. Somebody's trying to get rid of their phone in their lives, and the phone keeps coming back into their lives. They can't get rid of the phone.
Yep. I just can't quit you.
Laura, I couldn't do that. I could not put my phone on the other side of the room because when my alarm does go off, I got to snooze my phone and then, you know, relax for another 10 minutes. I don't want to have to get up, snooze the phone, then come back, then get up again. I guess you could just get a standard alarm clock.
We're thinking about doing that, actually, because the reason that I have to do this with my phone, I'm one of these people who will set like 5 alarms because I'm so apt to hit the snooze button and just try to get a few more minutes of sleep. And if I have the phone accessible to me and I can keep hitting that snooze button, I 100% will. And I'll be late for work and whatever else I need to do. So I really have to put it on the other side of the room to make myself get up, and also make myself like actually prepare for my day. I got into a really bad habit for a while of rolling out of bed 5 minutes before I had to sign on to work. And for a while I was like, oh, this is great. I get to sleep in. I don't have a commute. But I recognize the downside of that is that I feel groggy for the first 2 hours of my day. So at least if I get up an hour, hour and a half early, you know, try to work out. I don't always do it, but at least make myself like some coffee and sit down and watch something entertaining that I'm interested in. It gets me ready for my day. So yeah. That's why I have to be responsible.
Maybe take Canela outside. I think it can really help to actually move your body in some way just to wake it up. I'll never forget.
Always makes me take her.
One of my English teachers or geography teachers in high school described. When we all in the class looked like we were falling asleep in class, he'd always be like, you guys have tired blood. You got to move around. That blood's tired. It's not doing anything. No wonder you're falling asleep in class. And he's right, though. I mean, that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah. Well, we did ask members of our Facebook group over at facebook.com/group/millennial if they've ever experienced or are currently experiencing insomnia. And if so, if they found any ways to help combat it. Philippa said, I've always suffered from insomnia, but during the height of the pandemic, it became debilitating. One thing that helped, which I actually heard on the show, was ASMR. I found tucking you in videos helpful. I'm a mom, and I think having someone tell me to go to bed, get under the covers, get cozy, really helped me.
That's so cute.
I know. Hey, Andrew, we have one person who wasn't like freaked out by ASMR on the show.
Yeah, we got feedback about that. Where was the warning about the ASMR? I can't hear that.
Philippa, it's your friends at Millennial. It's time to go to bed. Let me tuck you in. Pull back the covers. Yeah, that's right. All right, now lay in there. Lay in there. Okay, I'll stop.
Maybe we should record some of these and release them separately, like bedtime routine with Millennial.
Bedtime
routine.
That could
be our variety show.
Bedtime songs. We can do a whole album of stuff. Bedtime spooky stories.
Oh. New physical gift for 2022.
There we go. Hey, my dad did a yoga routine for the show when Trump won the election in 2016. Remember?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You can re-release that for anyone who wants that. Well, maybe you don't want that trauma revisited. But if you ever need to just be like, relax and say some curse words, it's a great resource. I also asked Mark, and I transcribed this because he didn't want to write it in. He said, that's my secret, Captain. I've always had insomnia. For you MCU fans out there. He said, I have to always make the conscious decision to go to bed. I never feel tired at night. I usually end up laying down and watching something or thinking until I fall asleep, which is exactly what I do, but that makes it harder for me to go to sleep. So,
right.
I don't think it helps.
This is from John. I had some insomnia during the height of the pandemic. I found the best thing was to get out of bed and read something in print, magazine, newspaper, book, etc. Also drink sleepy time tea with honey, usually worked for me. That's an interesting one because, you know, we've had this sponsor on the show, Felix Gray, and they have these blue light filtering glasses, and the blue light is known to keep you awake longer. What John's saying here is he's looking at something that doesn't have any light shining in your face, a magazine, newspaper, book, etc. Speaking of getting out of bed, I've done this trick too, but my trick, this is going to sound so random, and I don't do this anymore, but I used to, when I had a hard time falling asleep, I would get out of bed, grab a slice of cheese from the fridge, eat it, and go back to bed. That was it. It was just a slice of cheese. It would help me fall asleep. I think it was just the whole getting out of bed, getting back in bed. You're kind of like resetting your position and your intention to go to bed. And that helped.
Yeah. That makes sense to me because you're breaking the cycle, right? Like rather than laying there and feeling anxious about why you can't fall asleep, you're just breaking the cycle and getting up, getting your mind to focus on something else so that you're reset by the time you come back to bed.
Yeah.
Got a comment in the Discord, and I'm going to read it anonymously because I don't know if they want their name tied to this, but I agree with this comment. They say, best solution is alcohol, but that's not great. Weed is pretty good too. So yeah, I have to say CBD and Delta 8 have definitely been my friends. If I have a Delta 8 gummy, that usually sends me to night land. But I have to be careful about how much I do that, because if I do it every night, it makes me feel groggy all the time. So I have to be selective.
Yeah. So I don't smoke weed, but I have been known to drink alcohol, and that 100% helps me fall asleep. I have zero issues falling asleep at night when I've had even just a little glass of whiskey. But as this person said in the Discord, I don't want to have to drink every night. So on nights I don't drink, I take some CBD oil. And that, I believe, helps me.
Rachel says, I've had periods where I can't sleep or can't get a restful sleep. And the periods usually last... And the periods during the last year where it's like my brain cannot wait to shut down, I started turning on an audiobook, usually... one I've already read, so I don't get involved in the story and stay up to fall asleep sometimes. And I think it's worked. In relation to this, I want to recommend the Sleep With Me podcast. It's huge. And it's great so because good. You know he's telling you a story, but it really doesn't make very sense. And a lot of the stories are very boring, but just kind of having that noise on in the background is great. And there's never any like loud sounds or weird voices or anything like that. So it's good stuff.
I'm so glad you mentioned Sleep With Me. I support them on Patreon, and it's so great because there are these nonsensical stories that really... there are no stakes. You're not missing anything if you fall asleep. So it's just very calming. He has a very calming voice. And I don't want to describe his voice as sleepy, but it makes me sleepy, which is the point, I guess.
Yeah, it's very like comfortable and rumbly. And it's great because now the podcast app on the phones, they have timers. So you can set a timer to... stop in, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours or whatever. You don't have to worry about it playing all night long, which is really great. So if you don't want to try out like a noise machine, this might be a good alternate. And I'm sure that by now somebody's figured out how to put like rain noises and stuff on podcasts as well. So you can set a timer for those.
That would
be helpful.
Sorry. I love listening to podcasts while falling asleep. I feel like I'm getting cozy in bed and I'm listening to my favorite shows. And to the point about not missing much or getting stressed that you're missing something, I don't really mind if I'm missing content in these podcasts. I just mainly listen to tech news podcasts or other podcasts that I enjoy, but I'm not super into. So I don't need every word of them. And I will usually use AirPods when going to bed, so the wires aren't there while I'm tossing and turning. When I'm done, I just pull the AirPod out and it automatically pauses. So it's like, it's not hard to pause listening with the AirPods.
I'm just afraid that I'm going to fall asleep with the AirPods in and lose them.
How are you going to, I mean, you know, your AirPod's not going to fall into the abyss. Do you have like a...
Well, I mean, what if they get like tangled in the sheets or they fall behind the bed or something?
Yeah, I've lost them in the sheets before, but like I quickly find them.
I'm always just worried that Jasper will find the AirPod first.
Yeah.
Or the AirPods first.
Okay. That's fair.
That is a fear that TikTok has embedded into me. I don't think he would eat them, but I've seen too many TikToks of dogs in particular eating AirPods.
Okay.
Yep. And then people turn the volume up and they can hear it coming out of their dog.
Like Kelly Clarkson blasting from the bowels of your dog.
No.
Man. Well, Sean says, I started actually exercising in June last year, mostly treadmill type stuff. And that increase in physical activity definitely helped me sleep through the night better. Yes, this is so true. And it's one of these things that I know it's true because I've experienced it, but I have the damnedest fucking time convincing myself to exercise consistently. I'm working on it. I'm trying to be better. But it's hard to have the willpower to do that all the time.
When I was in LA, I used to, there was a Planet Fitness I really liked nearby where I was living. And whenever I couldn't sleep or it felt like I was going to have a hard time sleeping, I would just go down there and hop on the treadmill for 30 minutes. And then by the time, you know, I drove myself back, I was ready to go to bed. So
it probably doesn't need to be said, but there have been so many studies backing up the fact that exercise can help you sleep at night. Laura, to your concern about, you know, just getting the motivation to do it, I guess you said regularly. For me, I like doing it almost daily just because I get a high off of it. I genuinely feel better. If you can find a way to like just genuinely experience a new high with working out, then you'll do it more often, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I've been there. That's the thing. So before the pandemic, we were so on our routine. We were hitting the gym 3 to 4 times a week, super consistent. And it was just the pandemic really knocked that habit out of whack for me.
Yeah.
And so definitely working on it. It's not as consistent as I would like, but I think I'll get there. It's just going to take some more time to get myself back to 2020 levels.
All right. So we need to record a ASMR tuck-in track and also like a Motivate Laura track.
Yeah, that'd
be
great.
Hey, Laura, what's up? It's time to drop in. Give me 20. Let's go.
Modified, right? I can do 20 modified push-ups.
Modified. You can do push-ups with your knees on the floor. There's a blunt at the end of this set.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, baby.
So finally, Kate says, my pandemic insomnia started when my kids were suddenly doing school from home. I was with them all day and had to shift my workday to start after they were in bed, working late into the night, pulling that second shift. I needed coffee to stay awake, working until 2 a.m. most nights, but even on the nights when I didn't, I found I just couldn't turn my brain off despite being dead tired. I had zero time for myself, so I found it in bits and pieces at night when I should have been sleeping. I started taking CBD some evenings and that helped a bit, but I needed to time it correctly on the nights I was working so that I could still stay awake. My sleep still isn't back to normal.
Kate, a lot of us are right there with you. As I think we've discussed on this episode today, it's a work in progress. And just wanted to include a little disclaimer here as we wrap this topic up. We are not medical professionals. This is not medical advice. These are just people's experiences, and it's very much scratching the surface of the topic of insomnia. So if you think you may have insomnia, or if sleeping in general is difficult for you and it's making it hard to function during the day. And no matter what you try, you're not able to adopt a healthy sleep routine, reach out to your doctor. That's going to be the best person to talk to because there are also medical reasons that could explain insomnia. So definitely reaching out to a trusted physician is what we recommend here at the show.
Yeah. And I want to include one more piece of feedback. Liza said this in our Discord a few minutes ago. My mom, the therapist, said to me, get up at the same time every morning and then you'll want to go to sleep early naturally. Liza said that it works for her. Sarah said that she tells clients that too. And Jason brought up that getting up at the same time, including weekends, sets the sleep pattern and makes it much easier. And I completely agree with that. This is something I've always done as well. I can't sleep in on the weekends. I get up at like 6:30. I'm too used to that. So on the weekends, I can't sleep in much more. I'm also a bit of a morning person. I think that helps me too. I like mornings. They're peaceful, especially on weekends. So I still want to get up at 6:30 Saturday and Sunday and just enjoy the peace of the weekend. But yeah, try keeping a schedule even through the weekend. That's really important. I don't think a lot of people do that.
I'm going to try this. Probably not this coming week, but maybe the week after, and I'll report back on my findings.
Don't just report back. I want to text every morning at 8 a.m. You're going to get out of bed and you're going to text me.
I'm not waking up at 8 a.m.
8:30. 8:30? Okay.
8:30.
All right.
That's my compromise.
That'll be 5:30 my time, an hour before I get up.
Set your Slack notifications to do not disturb. And that way I can send it to you and you won't get the notification.
Not Slack, Laura, because there's a new feature where you can schedule messages in Slack. You're going to cheat and pre-schedule them. I want text messages, things you can't schedule in advance.
That's so much work to schedule.
No, it's
that
not.
That is a lot of work. Don't be mad at me if I wake you up at 5:30 in the morning.
Oh, I've said this before. My phone is silenced. Nobody can get to me while I sleep. If somebody dies, I won't know until I wake up.
All right. Well, we'll be back to the show in a moment. But first, I wanted to share a quick word from our second sponsor this week, Talkspace. We've shifted how we work and learn, but sometimes it feels like the world is changing faster than we can keep up with it. I know I've recently felt a bit overloaded looking at my calendar, and I can always do with a reminder that I can manage my time better to help reduce stress. With Talkspace, you can easily match with a licensed therapist or schedule a session from the comfort of your own device. I've been making more of an effort to practice mindfulness a few times a week, which is something I learned in therapy, and it is so helpful. I can genuinely feel the difference on days that I practice mindfulness versus the days that I don't. You can set goals with your Talkspace therapist and develop techniques to cope in difficult times. Talkspace also works around your schedule at your convenience with live video sessions and unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist. If you need a little support to help you through the end of the year or want to start building towards a better 2022, Talkspace is here to help. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with promo code MILL. That's $100 off your first month when you use code MILL at Talkspace.com.
Should we talk about the post office?
Yeah.
Yes.
What the heck is going on?
You know what? A lot is going on. In case you missed it, there have been some pretty big changes going on at the U.S. Postal Service, which, if you haven't noticed them now that they've gone into effect as of October 1st, you're definitely going to start noticing them going into the holiday season. So these changes come as part of Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's 10-year plan designed to cut costs and raise new revenue. The post office has been struggling for years, or the U.S. Postal Service has been struggling for years. We've talked a little bit about their financial struggles in the past, but this is kind of the first of some major changes that are really going to put this into a bit more perspective in terms of, you know, what they're trying to do to rectify this. So, like I said, some of these changes as part of the 10-year plan already went into effect as of October 1st. So the major one is that first-class mail will now take anywhere from 2 to 5 days to be delivered. Before, it was an average of 3 days. So your mail coming slower is a really big one, and not everybody is happy about that. This is going to affect some people in certain regions more than others. I feel like that's always how it works whenever big changes get into place. And part of the reason that the slowdown is happening over at the USPS is because they're cutting back on airport transportation, which is a lot more expensive. So before, everything was kind of getting transported on planes, and now only 12% of first class mail is going to be transported on planes. And like I said, the slower service will largely depend on where you live. And the Washington Post has a little webpage that you can access to kind of figure out how much longer potentially it could take for you to see mail. Did you guys get a chance to play around with this?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Apparently my city, Vegas, is one of the cities that will be most affected. Mail will be delayed by a day on average.
How about you, Laura?
It's going to be about a day delay as well. From the vantage point of it being mid-October, doesn't sound like a big deal, but I think when we start to get into the holiday season, it will begin to feel a bit more urgent.
Right, exactly. I'm okay out here in the San Francisco Bay Area for now. It looks like most people won't see very much delays at all, but 29% still could see, you know, delay up to this new 5-day situation, which is quite a bit, you know, 30% of the population in the area is still quite a sizable chunk. So again, like Laura was saying, with the holidays and things naturally getting delayed, probably means that we'll be seeing more of that going into November, December.
And this can be a big deal for some people because people rely on the USPS for their meds. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that could be affected by this. So I guess the companies that are delivering these will have to figure out new schedules to make sure medicine is delivered on time. But, you know, we've for as long as we've lived, I think it's always been 3 days max. That's how long it takes for first class mail to be delivered anywhere in the country. And it's been good. It's worked well.
Yes.
I don't know personally if I really care too much. This is very good to know, but I'm trying to think if anything, the mail being delayed will affect me in any serious way. And I don't think so. I'm never like really counting the days until something arrives in the mail via USPS. Now, if I'm, you know, if I want something from Amazon or a new iPhone, then yeah, I'm greedy. I want it now. But those types of things aren't delivered through USPS.
Yeah. And you know, you bring up a really good point that we're really lucky in that most likely the three of us and perhaps quite a few people listening don't really have to rely too much on the USPS to get things that are important. But then you look at people in rural parts of the country that really rely on the USPS because they're not close enough to like a FedEx or a UPS to send out packages or to receive things, perhaps. There's also elderly people as well who perhaps still pay bills physically instead of doing electronic bill pay. And then there are tons of people that still get medication in the mail that's all delivered by the USPS as well. And so the idea of that getting delayed as well, checks, some people still get physical checks that come in the mail. If they're, you know, living paycheck to paycheck and then they now might be seeing an upwards of a 5-day delay, that's, you know, that could really put them in a bit of a pickle. Yeah. So these are all reasons why 19 attorney generals across the United States, as well as the attorney general in D.C., are filing an administrative complaint to seek to block these budget cutting plans. So I guess we'll see what happens going forward with that. But it's safe to say that people are not pleased by this. In addition to the delays, they have also rolled out some increased pricing So first class packages are going to be increasing by 30 cents and increases for Priority Mail, Priority Express, and Parcel Select could be increasing upwards of $5. And then you should also just, if, you know, all of this stays in place, look to basic stamps going up in price as well. Stamps already increased by 3 cents over the summer. So it's 58 cents per stamp now. But going forward, the USPS is looking to increase stamp prices twice a year. So once in January and then once in July.
My jaw honestly dropped at these holiday surcharges. I had not seen this before.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what is this Uber? Like, why is there an extra fee during certain periods of the year? Like, I get it, but still, why? This is not right. We shouldn't have to pay extra to mail something during a certain time of the year.
Right, and it's already started. So,
yeah,
you know, these surcharges you're talking about, October 3rd through December 26th. So you either fork up the cash, the extra cash, or everybody's getting their presents late.
But Pam, I don't know if you know this, but okay, let's say I send a holiday card right now. I have these forever stamps. I assume they honor these, right?
Yeah, because okay. They're forever.
Right. Well, I don't know now that there's this new surcharge.
Okay, listen, that's what they said. Okay. They said forever stamps were forever when they rolled those out in like, what, the 90s or the 2000s?
Right, right.
So I think you're right. That is the way to go unless they've changed that as well. But that's how I understand it, that they just always work.
I bet they're going to stop selling these forever stamps. Because this is another way that people, you know, save a little cash on USPS.
Yeah, exactly. You can buy them at Costco if you have a Costco membership, too. I think they give you a tiny little deal. So,
yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this is the circumstance of, you know, the USPS being underfunded and understaffed and overworked. Maybe most of us don't have a full appreciation of what it means to have a postal service that serves so many corners of this nation. I mean, we spoke previously on the show about what could happen if the postal service was defunded and there was huge potential for these mail deserts where people living in extremely rural areas would have to depend on the FedExes and the UPSs of the world. And even those wouldn't be guarantees necessarily, and they're way more expensive. So unfortunately, I see this as just a symptom of a larger problem.
Well, yeah, because this is really important. And this is another great thing about the USPS. They have to deliver to every address in the country. FedEx can say no, UPS can say no. These other ones can say no. USPS can't, by, I guess, federal law. They must deliver everywhere. And that's really great for accessibility in this country and being able to reach everybody. But it's also, and I get it, a big strain on the USPS. The fact that they do have to trudge out to the most remote locations to deliver to addresses. I get that. But, you know, that's a good thing for this country to have.
Yep. And I'm honestly okay paying for that.
Yeah, I guess.
This is very much a...
I mean, tax-wise, yes, but not through the holiday surcharges.
Yeah, that seems a little bit petty because, you know, especially coming out of a pandemic where a lot of people are strapped for cash, just trying to have a nice holiday season, you know, it kind of seems like a bit of a blow, especially since we've also talked about how we've seen price increasing across the board when you go to stores, just for like, I think I talked before about how I noticed that my dog's food has gone up a couple of bucks and it's not that big of a deal, but it kind of is in the grand scheme of things. And I think that we're just going to see that more and more now.
Oh, yeah. Supply chains are so fucked. I was reading that bacon is apparently becoming very expensive. So, yeah, I think this is, it's all a symptom of a much larger problem, unfortunately.
Does any of this have us thinking that we need to start doing all of our holiday shopping and mailing earlier than we might normally do? I know that in general, for the past couple of months, even before all of these changes were implemented, everybody was kind of talking about this in terms of supply chains, you know, telling people get out there and do your Christmas shopping early because the supply chain is not going to be enough to, you know, sustain what everybody's looking to purchase and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Because of the supply chain issues, I definitely want to get a jump on holiday shopping. We just don't know how everything's going to go. And I think a lot of these retailers, like Target, actually, are encouraging people to do their holiday shopping early. I think just over this past weekend, Target, which is one of the biggest retailers in the U.S., had some like Target days or whatever. It's like Target's own Black Friday. And they're doing it early this year because they want people to do all their holiday shopping early so they don't have to worry about supply constraints closer to the holidays.
I've already started my holiday shopping, mainly because of seeing this plan in the doc. I had kind of fallen behind on paying attention to the Postal Service. And then I saw Pam planning this and I was like, oh, fuck. Okay. So I've already gotten started. We'll see if I can keep the momentum up. But that means that we also have to schedule our annual Secret Santa accordingly to make sure that all of our gifts are reaching us on time.
Are we doing cameos again this year? Cameo supply stream.
Yeah, we did do cameos last year. Those were funny.
Those were funny.
All right, so I also need to record an ASMR track for Laura, encouraging her to do her holiday shopping. Hey, yeah. Laura, just load up Amazon.com. Put in a nice little typing and click sound.
I'm going to be honest with you. That's probably what's going to happen.
What, Amazon?
Yeah.
It does make it so much easier.
It does.
I feel so bad just like having Amazon send the stuff to people, but at least you know it's going to get there on time.
Right. Though also with these holiday surcharges, how long until Amazon starts doing this?
Oh my God. You know? If Amazon's smart, they'll keep things the way it is.
Yeah. Because, yeah, it'll get more people to actually use them.
Yes.
But here's another recommendation. Etsy. I did some Etsy holiday shopping last year. Yeah. You're supporting the little guy. They're making great products. You can feel confident in what you're purchasing because you can see the reviews. You can see a lot of photos. It's such a great way to shop for people during the holidays. Also, the gifts are unique. That's like the best part of it all.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say,
use Etsy. Try Etsy first, then go to Amazon and these other guys.
I use Etsy too for like all of my, if I'm trying to buy a pop culture related gift for anybody in my life, I go to Etsy first because you're going to be able to find something super unique there that's going to make that person that's a fan of the thing just like so much happier.
Yes.
Than going to Hot Topic and buying a t-shirt everybody's going to have, you know?
Right. Yeah. I actually have a related recommendation, and I mentioned these a couple minutes ago. Forever Stamps from USPS. This is my recommendation this week. I hope everybody already knows about these. You can buy a pack of these stamps, and they're good. Forever, at least for now, until DeJoy says, you know what, we're not honoring these anymore. I bet he's going to set a deadline at some point where these no longer work. But these are great because you pay once, and then even if the USPS raises their prices, these are still good. And by the way, there are global Forever stamps as well. Less people probably know about that. So you buy those, and those will help you send a letter anywhere in the world for one flat rate. Not a package, just a flat little envelope. We've used them before to ship out Patreon benefits.
All right, y'all, we've got one more sponsor to share today before we wrap the show. Their Way, and I can say they saved my hair after a few days at the beach recently. I love being a beach bum, which means swimming in the ocean and sitting on the beach for a few hours. Unfortunately for my hair, that means a whole lot of sand, salt, and sun exposure. But it's never too late to hit the reset button with the Clarifying Detox Shampoo from Way. I don't think anyone is a stranger to knowing I absolutely love this shampoo. And Pam is a fan too, right, Pam?
Absolutely love it. It does so well with my naturally wavy hair. And I really appreciate that it's really gentle on my locks and it's super moisturizing. And it's just a fantastic product for all hair types. Laura and I have very different hair types. And the fact that, you know, when we can use the same shampoo is like amazing to me.
I know, right? Like the fact that I have my crazy like blue hair and it doesn't strip the color out of it. And the fact that I have straight hair, you have wavy hair, and it manages both of our hair types really, really nicely, I think speaks to how universally it works. Reset your hair and scalp with the Clarifying Detox Shampoo from Way. Way was created by celebrity hairstylist Jen Atkin to create the first socially conscious hair care brand. And don't forget to explore their full collection of hair care, body, and fragrance products. When you're ready to undo some damage, hit the reset button with Way Detox Shampoo. Go to theouai.com and use code MILL to get 15% off your entire purchase. That's theouai.com, code MILL.
Also helping us support this show are our lovely patrons who we love so much. And each week we record this After Dark installment for them so they get a little more millennial. And we try to save some good topics for After Dark. Pam, what are we talking about this week?
We are talking about trick-or-treating and just how it's evolved in our time versus the trends that we're seeing now. We're coming up onto Halloween, so we just thought it'd be really fun to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely a lot to say. Pam came dressed for the discussion. She's wearing orange.
Also for the Giants game today.
Oh, I see. Did they win? Did it happen already?
They won yesterday. They're playing today at 6:30, I think.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
so
right.
I'll miss a little
hour?
Bit.
Cool.
Yeah, we gotta get started on AD, y'all. I have a date with the TV.
No problem. We will.
We got this.
A couple other Patreon benefits. We live stream our recordings each week on video, so you can pee while watching us. So you can see Pam's sweater and see us and what we're up to. It's a lot of fun to do the podcast on video. We also record a monthly variety show. We also do a monthly hangout with Bay patrons. We also offer a physical gift every year for Bay patrons. There's lots of benefits, so please take a moment to check them all out. Patreon.com/millennial. We really appreciate your support. Okay, time for some recommendations. I recommended the Forever Stamps. Laura, what's yours?
I would like to recommend Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl. This is a new fighting game that has come out, and it stars all of your favorite Nickelodeon characters from childhood, so there's nostalgia, plus it's a really fun game. I've personally been playing as Nigel Thornberry, which is amazing. Each character is, of course, customized, so their attacks are a little bit different depending on who you play, and it's all stuff that is specific to their characters. It's a lot of fun. I think my brother, he and I were playing the other night, and I think he's going to main as Cat Dog. So we were doing Cat Dog versus Nigel Thornberry, and it was so much fun.
What a blast of nostalgia.
I know. Like, and so I think it's fun. On sale in the PlayStation Store right now.
And then I want to reiterate my recommendation for the Sleep With Me podcast if you're looking for something to potentially help you fall asleep.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to today's episode. Make sure you're following the show for free in your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. And while you're there, please do leave us a review. You can also contact us by writing directly to millennialshow@gmail.com or by using the contact form or anonymous confessional on millennialshow.com. And finally, you can follow us on social media. We are Millennial Show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.